now, 92.9 FM ESPN presents Memphis's biggest columnist.
You ain't got to do nothing, homeboy. You ain't writing nothing. No, you ain't. Ain't writing nothing. I ain't letting him write. He ain't getting no interviews.
It's the award-winning Jeff Calkins from the Daily Memphian and the Jeff Calkins Show.
I don't get no interviews.
On 92.9 FM, ESPN. With special guest host, J.R. Moore from Ingram Hill.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is something they call a groundbreaker. So let me first apologize to the shots and the ties for your makeup.
Memphis. Welcome to the Jeff Calkins Show. My name is J.R. Moore, filling in for the main man, Jeff Calkins, right across the grass. He could be across grass, but also glass. Jeffrey,
there was grass once upon a time, yeah.
There was grass here once upon a time.
Yeah, probably weeds, let's be real.
Love that. Yeah. On the show today, in the 10 o'clock hour, we don't have Chris Harrington, because where is he? Where's Chris?
Chris is
he's out of the country.
He's in Scotland.
Correct.
Chris Harrington.
I hope he comes back with a little bit of a Scottish accent.
Yes.
Do you think he picked up
the Madonna?
Things? Like Madonna, yes. I hope it just took being there for a week.
Who was it? Is it Alec Baldwin's wife? She just decided she wanted to be exotic, and she just started talking with a Spanish accent.
As you should.
Yeah.
Or you'd be like,
but at least like Madonna did marry an English guy.
That does, like, yeah, makes a difference. Like, I wonder how long it takes to live somewhere before you either lose your accent or take up the accent of your environment.
It happens really quickly. Because I can tell, like, when I get around my college friends,
sure,
I talk a little more noisy. You do kind of do that. And then
you become a California weenie?
And then when I would go, like, during college, like, when I'd come home, like, even for, like, 2 weeks, and I'd go back, and I'm like, whoa!
Hey, buddy!
Whoa! You don't talk like that. I was like, actually, I do talk like this.
I don't normally talk
the way that you think I talk.
That's exactly right. Well, I hope he comes back with at least a slight tinge of a Scottish accent. That would be a fantastic addition to the show.
I just love whenever a big guy goes over to Scotland, they just call him, like, wee. They use the, like, wee Chris Harrington.
It's the best. So, in the Chris Harrington slot, we're going to have Max Paquette. He is in the biomechanics in the sports medicine department, or the health sciences department at University of Memphis. He's a very smart guy, and he is on the ground in Paris, and will talk to us about track and field and running, and explain some things to us laymen that we might not otherwise know. And we also have Jason Smith on the show in his normal spot on Friday. So excited to have those two guys on the show. Most importantly, to start things off today, I want to make it known that I have officially completed the cycle here at 99 FM ESPN.
Oh, you've hit for all four.
This is the final time slot for me to fill in. I feel like I'm officially the 2 a.m. booty call for ESPN.
I think it's me and you, buddy.
I think it is it
maybe
me and you?
John. Maybe John
maybe
once
so.
Upon a time.
I feel like I get those texts from Brad. They just say, you up?
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, Brad.
Yeah, those texts.
Come on, Dad.
Those texts have been coming a little more frequently after your boy went into the office and was like, you know, I don't have to talk all the time. Like, I know that I have this reputation as being someone who loves the sound of his own voice, but it's like, I do not.
So I've officially done it. I've hit every time slot on this show or on this station.
You certainly have to be the first non-full-time employee that's it for the cycle.
Yeah.
Like, I don't even know who else would qualify.
I don't either.
Brad, but Brad's a full-time employee,
Brad's a full-time employee, so it's pretty
exciting. Congratulations.
Thank you. I feel
we actually should get you a plaque or something.
Can I sign the banner in here in the studio? I feel like it should be known.
Maybe I'll give you your the CD you autographed for me.
20 years ago.
Peabody rooftop party. I want to say it was like 08, maybe.
Yeah, perfect.
Yeah, I found that. Maybe I'll give you that to you.
Sweet. I'll re-sign it as...
Yeah, I believe that's an enhanced CD as well.
You better believe it.
You pop that bad boy in there, you might get a little additional free content.
You better believe it is.
Oh, yeah.
Trying to explain to somebody in their 20s now about an enhanced CD, they were like, what? Number one, what is a CD? Number two, how do I play this CD? And number three, how do I get the enhanced content because my computer does not have a CD drive?
What's the last... because we used to have like a super old computer in,
sure.
in the booth.
Right.
And that did have a CD-ROM player.
Yep.
It was like the
yeah,
combo.
The DVDs.
Remember the combo,
the
baby.
Combo. Oh, yeah. Yeah. If you got an expensive one, it could burn DVDs
oh,
and CDs.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, buddy.
Oh, yeah. Nothing better than a good old mixtape. Should totally go for this. I like Jack's Mannequin.
Yeah. Yeah
you'll listen to this.
You'll listen to this.
So what's the last computer? Because I'm now getting annoyed. Freaking, this is where me being like a slave to the cult of Mac
yeah.
kills me.
Sure.
Because you, like, I remember once upon a time, like, they would give you everything on the
yes.
computer. Now, you don't even get a USB port.
No, you get two USB slots and that.
Well, you get like a USB-C so you can yeah. go buy a $30 adapter
exactly
so that we can
right.
keep the Mac cash flow rolling.
Adapters on adapters.
What's the last computer that actually has, like, the CD-ROM player?
I don't know, because I have an old, I mean, I'm a Windows guy, I have an old laptop, and it's a big laptop because
yeah.
I had to do music and video
yeah.
stuff on it, so it's a big boy, and it does not have a CD player or a disk drive on it. So I don't know how long you have to go back before for on laptops.
Feels like at least 10 years, right?
At least 10 years.
Because I'm thinking like 2014, I think I bought a new computer for the same thing. Like I needed video, and I was doing
yep.
other stuff. I'm nearly certain that thing didn't happen.
I mean, this is like a 2016 model. It
yeah.
does not have a disk drive.
Yeah.
It's got everything else, but not a disk drive. That's crazy.
I do also feel like if you think about it in the life cycle of how we obtain music, records feel like they lasted the longest.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, it's the amount of time, it's like 8-track, then to cassette.
Yes.
Like, that's a brief window.
Yes.
But we really phased out of CDs very quickly.
Very fast. Like, the technology just took over too fast. And there's just no vibe around a CD.
That's true, because it's plastic, and it's like, it's, yeah.
I mean,
it's scratched
easily. You do still get artwork, and you have the booklet
yeah.
and all. You still get, that's the last, you know, thing we had of actual physical artwork to go with liner notes and the whole
yeah.
thing. But there's no vibe around a CD, and if it gets scratched, a digital scratch on a CD doesn't add character. It adds annoyance.
Correct.
To where maybe a scratch or some artifacts on a piece of, on the vinyl,
yeah.
well, it doesn't sound great. It just has, it does add character.
It doesn't stop the song.
It doesn't stop the song.
Yeah.
It's
or the CD, or the whole album.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, you can still listen to it. And so there's still a vibe, there's always been a vibe around putting a record on a turntable, dropping the needle down, and it all the crackling just creates a vibe that even the digital aspect of recording music, people are still trying to recreate digitally. Like, how do we make this sound warmer like a record?
Yeah.
And so there's plugins that, you know, this makes it sound like tape.
Vinyl was actually like the one kind of like hipster music thing I never got into. Because I was never convinced it actually sounded better.
It doesn't sound better. Better.
It's obviously a different experience.
Different. It sounds great, but it doesn't necessarily sound better. It depends on what you think better is. Because, like, I put it in this way. Think about Christmas music.
Yeah.
I can't think of a Christmas song that I want to listen to that was recorded past 1987. It's every matter of fact. My favorite ones are the ones that were recorded in the 50s and 60s.
Well,
and
hold
why?
On, hold on.
Because
was,
they had a vibe.
When was All I Want for Christmas Is You?
That could be mid 90s.
And
so
we can
really
poke
good.
Fun all we want, but that NSYNC Christmas album went.
I mean, sure. I'm not to say there's not like some actual
but,
like legit jams, but the
there's
bulk,
no question.
The bulk of the good stuff is
because most of it was like written for like a movie.
It's yes.
like it had to tell a story.
Yes.
It actually had, it wasn't just literally purely commercial.
But it sounds different.
Yes,
and
totally
because
agree.
It feels different. It feels like the warmly lit Christmas tree to
yeah.
where how clean music sounds now
yeah.
and how, because of how great studios and technology is, it's too clean. And so people can write a great Christmas song and it sounds perfect. But that's the thing is that it doesn't hit you in the spot. And that's what vinyl does. Vinyl hits you in the spot to where clean, like to very clean recorded music doesn't hit you in the heart feels.
Well, it's like, to your point, we are in like the CGI era of music.
Yeah.
Where everything is like, yes, technically it's a masterpiece.
Yeah, exactly.
There are no mistakes.
It's perfect.
It's amazing.
But
it's almost like you can't, like our brains are like, I don't know. It's the same thing. It's like when you're watching a movie that has brilliant CGI, mm-hmm. Yeah, you're like, this looks cool, but I don't believe that I'm in. I feel I feel like I'm watching people act in front of a green screen.
Correct. Music is, people aren't perfect.
Yeah. And it's why I love, like, in the end, like, to me, it's like the purest. If I see a band has a live album,
yes,
I always go and listen to that because to me, like, there's some, that is a different experience,
yes,
that I always love.
It's why nowadays, when people go, oh, you're playing live? You're not, there's no tracks involved in your show? And we're like, no, we're just four dudes or five dudes up here playing instruments. People appreciate that because they're now so accustomed to everything being on a grid being perfect.
The day that I saw Blink and they had tracking, I was like, guys,
right,
come on.
It's
like
it's,
I'm all for my guys making as much money as possible,
yeah,
but it's like your whole thing was never playing in key, like on key.
That's
in
right.
Time. Like that was what your charm was.
That's the charm.
It's like good enough.
That's the charm, is that it was human, and it that there's something about that connects to people in the fields that you can't really explain. It's that, what is that thing? If I could tell you what that thing was, we would all just do it over and over again and all be rich and famous. You can't explain it. You just know it when you hear it and when you feel it. And when it's perfect and exactly with no mistakes, there's nothing human about it. It sounds perfect, but it doesn't get you in the feels.
Do you think that you can find that whatever je ne sais quoi to keep our Olympic thing? Like, I don't think you can intentionally do it. I think you have to discover it, and then you realize, like, oh, that's our thing.
Yeah, no, you
can't. Like, you do it live, and you realize that connected. But, like, I think, like, if you set out, like, if you studied what you think makes particular bands popular to particular groups, you're like, I'm going to recreate that. Like,
yeah.
I just never think it works.
No, you just discover it. There's just so many happy accidents that happen, whether recording or live, that you go, oh, there was the light bulb.
Yeah.
We found it. I mean, there's a dude that I know that breaks down individual tracks of, like, what made this song great, and he has the individual tracks. And there's, like, the song Fix You by Coldplay,
yep,
which say what you want about Coldplay, that's an amazing song. That last 2 minutes is incredible.
Yes.
The background vocals on those 2 minutes, mm-hmm, when they are soloed out, they are so out of tune that would never pass today. They would auto-tune that.
Yeah.
You would fix that. But for whatever reason, in the track, it sounds amazing. But if you hear it soloed out, you're like, yo, man, what are you doing?
Remember the Grammys when people wore those stupid ribbons to protest auto-tuned?
Yes. Yes. Yes.
I mean, auto-tune really is like to me, when I hear all the arguments today about AI,
yeah,
I was like, oh, yeah, no, we already had these arguments like 15 years ago. It was like,
absolutely,
it's the exact same thing. It's like, it's a tool. Like, it can be overdone,
yep,
but it can also create a new experience.
That's exactly right. It can be used as art, like T-Pain did.
That, yes.
That dude can 100%. Legitimately sing, but he used it as
his gimmick.
His gimmick was,
his hook.
Was that.
Yeah.
And so it can be used as that. It can be abused. It can mask a lot of things. And what's crazy...
So can distortion on a guitar.
That's exactly right. What's incredible is that you can use it live now. So people that you're like, that person finally learned how to sing. What happened was, is that they finally got an engineer who can help them help
Blink,
out a little bit.
When Blink came back this time, they played Coachella, and people were asking, did Tom use auto-tune? I was like, wait till you find out about Post Malone, people.
Just go. Here's the thing.
You'll never believe this.
It's like, just go ahead and assume the answer is yes, and then let them prove you otherwise. No, they did not. But
yeah,
most likely the answer is yes. They're playing the tracks, and their voice is being tuned. That's how it goes. So the Olympics are on.
Yeah. All right. How do we feel about yesterday? I still haven't quite come to grips
no,
with how I feel one way or the other.
I haven't either. If you're unaware, Team USA basketball survived Serbia yesterday, 95-91. And, buddy, they were down 17. And it took some performances, like, by some of the most famous basketball players and some rotations and not playing some of these dudes to pull this off. It was a super fun game to watch.
Yeah, I will grant you that. It was thrilling.
Entertaining. Like, it was thrilling.
Well, and I mean, how many true Team USA basketball games do we have,
right,
where you aren't actually sure they're going to win?
That's exactly right. There is something about, like, being an American and this being your sport and seeing that famous of names on the same team trying their hardest. It's you get that in the All-Star game. You get these massive names on the same team, but like they don't give a crap at that point. But to see them like these dudes are playing like it's an NBA like NBA Finals. They are trying their hardest. It's kind of awesome seeing that on the same team. But also, why is the game so close?
And I think because like when I'm watching it, it felt like they were playing worse than they were.
Yes,
because when you went and you looked at the numbers, you realized, okay, they're not, this isn't a no-show.
No.
And yeah, they didn't crack 100 points for the first time. They still got to 95. Like, and nobody else has even been sniffing 100.
That Curry had 36, and what did he go? Did he go 9 of 14?
He was, at one point, I think it was 7 of 10 in the first half, and then he hit a 3 to start the second half. So he's 8 of 11 from 3. I think he finished like 8 of 12 or 8 of 13, maybe.
You get that kind of game from Curry?
But like, they were 52% from the field and like 50% from three, the whole team was.
Yes.
And so I'm sitting there going like, okay, maybe this is just tip your cap to Serbia because like it is, like they dug deep and they delivered the type of heroic performance to even make it a game.
Yep. It's one of those things to where that, yes, we have all the names and they're an all-star bunch, but it's hard to figure out a team. Like to play cohesively. And it always sounds corny to be like, yeah, but you got to have chemistry, you got to have a team. But if you just put the best talent out there, our talent will overcome. And look, I mean, I guess technically it's true because it's what happened last night or yesterday. But teams getting to play for years together, like a lot of these European countries, it does make a difference. They're like, I mean, even down to like my own basketball career where in AAU ball, I remember going and playing in state tournaments against like some team from Milan, Tennessee. And you're like, dude, we're about to wear these boys out. And it's a bunch of kids who are all my size. They're a bunch of guards. And they move like the San Antonio Spurs championship teams is how well they play.
And the ball never hits the floor.
And they wear you out.
Yes.
It's similar to that. And you're like, wait, how did this happen? We make this argument all the time. I feel like every 4 years, we're like, we just got to get these guys playing together so they can be a team. And that's hard to do.
It's not realistic.
It's not realistic.
Because the other thing is, all these players are, most of them are like $200 million players.
Yeah.
And teams are not going to sit there and go,
no.
Wait, you're going to go do what this summer?
That's exactly right.
No.
You're exactly right. It sounds like when we're in it, we become so engulfed in these 3 weeks or whatever, however long the Olympics are that they've actually run.
You could tell me 6 weeks. You could tell me like it's only been 10 days. I'd buy either.
Either one. Yeah. It feels like it's been on all summer.
Yes.
It's like if we get so wrapped up in it that it feels like we've got to change this. And then we win the gold medal and you're like, well, we're fine. It's whatever.
Well, it's to your point. So yesterday I was tracking it on the live line. And so for people that don't realize, like the live line is largely predicated on just running thousands and thousands of simulations. Mm-hmm. And eventually I don't think we ever became an underdog.
Right.
And so essentially what the numbers were telling you is the longer this game goes on, there is a clear talent advantage.
Sure.
And that's exactly what
we saw. Exactly
like,
what happened.
Jokic gave him 38 minutes.
Yep.
Which it is funny to think about, like, can he play 40?
Yeah.
And we're sitting there going, I'm like thinking in my head, it's like, I know that means can he play the whole game?
Yes.
But he plays 40 minutes all the time in the playoffs.
That's exactly right.
Now, I get it's a different game. There's more stoppages and the pace and whatnot. But it's like, they play 40 minutes in playoff games.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like, when it comes down to it, a depth, a lot of these European teams, depth becomes a problem. Like, they have a great starting five.
It feels like every game has largely played out the same way. It's competitive early.
Yes.
And then when you go to the bench, it's like playing, Alabama in their prime. It's like you realize, like, our starters got hurt. We're done. Their backups are our starters.
That's exactly right. You would think Jokic, they would, instead of giving him a break on the bench, you would just say, look, dude, just don't run down on offense or defense for a couple trips. You're not coming out of this game.
I mean, that's what Embiid does.
Yeah, like you can't just take, I feel like you can't take him out if you're Serbia. Even if he is like,
well, I mean, to your point,
take some possessions off.
The only time he came out in the first half, remember they tried to like steal a minute and a half at the end of the half. They were trying to steal it. And it's like, boom, that was the only run, really,
exactly
the U.S.
Right.
had. And it's like, it got back to like, I don't think it got to single. It got to single digits. I think it finished at like 11.
Yes.
But like you're like, all right. I mean, at one point, I was just rooting for him to foul out.
Yeah. Oh, for sure.
Because when he like picked up his third pretty quickly on that offensive foul on Embiid, I was like, maybe we should start like trying to draw some fouls.
Yeah.
Maybe we should start going at him.
Embiid was awesome yesterday.
I hate that.
I do too. Am I alone? I feel like actually maybe it's just the national people that because it's not like we talk about Embiid a ton locally in our market. I just hear the national guys talk about him. Out on my own here where I don't find him very likable.
So it flipped, and Connor Dunning made a good point. So because remember, like he was like Mr. Funny Guy.
Yes, he was like hilarious on Twitter and made jokes. And
Connor made the point though, if you think about that time, Doc and Ben Simmons.
Yeah,
that's who he's on the team with, and all of your frustration and whatnot went to them.
Went to them.
Now they're gone.
Yeah,
and we've started to see him in high leverage moments, dirty plays.
Yep.
This feels like ring chasing, but like at a like lower level. I don't think any of us actually cared that I don't think anyone actually cared that he chose to go play for someone. It just feels very cheap.
Yeah,
and then I think on top of that, he's not played well.
Right.
And a lot of times. And then there's this weird thing of like, are you hurt? Are you not? Like,
yeah,
I thought we just saw you in the playoffs. Like, you're hurt and you're now doing this. I just think that it was one of those ones where we probably had too favorable of an opinion of him early.
Yeah.
Because there were things that were like blinders for us.
Sure.
And now we're seeing the whole picture. And then I think it also just, to me, it's like, I don't know if this is our culture. I don't know if this is human nature, but it's like, you put somebody in front of us enough, we're going to start nitpicking.
That's true. And somebody in front of us enough that you talk about how awesome he is and he hasn't won anything yet.
Correct.
And matter of fact, kind of,
hasn't even made the conference finals.
Like kind of like very flopped in big situations. And so maybe that's, I mean, not to the extent of James Harden, but it's
it's not dissimilar.
He's not as unlikable as James Harden.
No, but I think part of that is because Harden's style of play, when you have a guard that just dominates the ball and it's just becomes a free throw shooting contest.
Yeah.
That's not stylistically
pleasing. It's so aesthetically gross.
At least like with a big, we're used to the big, like when he gets the ball taking, like that's like,
sure.
Like that's the nature of it. Like we're used to guards making plays
right.
And moving the ball. I don't love watching him.
No, that's true. All right, but he was awesome yesterday.
Yeah. Oh, yesterday was clearly his best game.
That man came in. It's like all the things that people talk about, like how awesome he is, are like, oh, you better watch out for Embiid. He's the best big in the league or in the world. And then you see him in the playoffs. And you're like, but is he? This is the moment that they all see in regular games.
Yes.
Where that because we're not a Philly market, we don't see him regularly do this. I think this is what they're all talking about. Is like he can be this guy, he just doesn't do it, and he just rarely does it in major moments. And this is the major moment he did it in.
And it helped that Jokic was on the floor.
It did help because he was in foul trouble and couldn't.
Well, I mean, and a couple of times, like he took him off the dribble.
Yeah,
like, it's the first time that, like, I'm still because I think a big part of it is like we've realized Jokic is clearly a better player.
Oh,
like what degree? I don't know. But to me, like, it's very obvious. You line him up and we say we're picking teams.
You're picking Jokic.
Correct.
Absolutely.
But yesterday was the first time I felt like, okay, I don't feel like his MVP is undeserved. Like, you know,
right.
Like it's the first time I'm trying to retroactively take it back. Like, our bad.
Sure.
Like, it's like, okay, because they were on the floor and at times, like, he looked to be getting the better of him.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, yesterday that was definitely Embiid's moment. It was kind of fun seeing them all on the floor together. It's fun like seeing KD, like these dudes are trying to play defense.
Watching KD, Steph, and LeBron in that fourth quarter, that was kind of fun.
That was way fun. Like, and just seeing how them trying to work together and figure out how to work together. There was like one moment with like just barely over a minute to go where LeBron pulled a LeBron three.
Yes.
And I was like, you just can't help yourself but LeBron this when you have all these other dudes on the floor, and you've just gone to the rim in the last 5 minutes, like, two or three times, and been unstoppable. And he's like, all right, I'm going to Lakers LeBron this and shoot a three. And you're like, no, don't do this. And then where they escaped. It worked out.
Yeah. But, I mean, it's the same thing. It's like, to your point, it's like, what? You've just been, like, getting to the rim. Like, that layup yesterday when you see from the behind angle and you realize that he technically loses the ball in midair and he still has, like, the awareness and the skill or whatever, I don't even know, God-given ability to, like, somehow recapture the ball and then spin it in. I was that's just unbelievable.
There are some things he does, like that. There are at 39 years old, there are things he does that you just don't make sense. And then he does, like, church league where with a minute 18 to go, rips a three. You're like, Steph Curry cannot miss right now, and you're the one shooting this three.
Didn't Steph hit one of those threes?
Yes.
Like I'm saying, like, right before.
Yeah.
Because I'm, like, trying to remember the sequence because we're on the air at the same time. I'm convinced that's the reason why he took it.
I think that it's the one, like, that bounced around the rim and then popped up and then went in.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then I'm convinced LeBron was going to come back and get his.
I think you're probably...
I'm convinced. I know how this man works. I've studied his work.
We're tooting Steph Curry's horn just a little bit too much.
Going to get mine. And, I mean, like, LeBron was incredible. He had a triple-double.
He really was incredible. It's crazy that Devin Booker is, like, the least important player on the court. And he's awesome. But, like, he just, like, figured out, like, oh, well, I'm just going to be, this is my role. I'm going to play hard defense, and, like, I'm going to score if I need to score.
It appears the least important person on the floor is Jason Tatum.
Well, no, he's not on the floor.
Which is weird to me.
It's crazy. Like, but there's got to be somebody, there's only five spots. You can't just, like, and if you're trying, when it comes down to it, you can't just play 12, cue Penny Hardaway. You can't just play 12 guys and expect to win big games.
Like,
even if they are awesome.
Like, I get it. They don't technically play the same position. But why is Derek White getting minutes when Tatum's not?
That is one of those...
Is it literally just because Derek gives you more shooting?
Doesn't Derek give you more defense?
I don't know. Tatum's a pretty good defender.
Yeah. But doesn't... The ball stops with Tatum, though, doesn't it?
I think the problem is... The guy, like, he is very ball dominant on offense.
Yes.
And if you have, in a rotation, if you have him and Anthony Edwards, who do you want with the basketball?
Correct.
And you want Anthony Edwards every time.
That's correct.
I think that's the problem.
Yeah.
It's still weird.
It's wild that
Well, I mean, I'm starting to think about this, like, have we just, like, gaslit the Celtics to just go on this, like, unbelievable F everyone tour by leaving Brown off.
Yeah.
And then they're icing out Tatum at times.
I think so.
I mean, Tatum is kind of getting the same treatment that Halliburton is.
Yeah. But if you don't think he ain't coming out with a chip on his shoulder next year to prove everything, because he's getting clowned about, like, not playing.
I mean, he's not even playing.
Right. If you think he ain't coming out trying to do some business.
Now, like, there is always the part of me, like, does that really matter? Like, because I've always, like...
I think so. I think their egos are way too big for him to be like... Like, do you... You know, when...
Right, that's not necessarily what I'm asking. So what I'm asking is... Because I definitely agree from the ego perspective, 100% with you. But to me, there's a difference between ego and can you do something about it?
Yes.
Because there's certain, like, you do that to LeBron, all of a sudden I'm like, okay, that was a bad.
That's poking the bear.
Correct. Are we sure you can, like, poke Tatum and he can consistently, like, he can go on a kill everyone tour?
That's a good, well, in yes and no. The problem is I think you poke Jaylen Brown and him.
I think that's, yeah.
That's the issue. And I don't know that
I don't think there's going to be a championship hangover.
I don't think so either. I think as good of a chance as anybody of going on of repeating.
But see, isn't this kind of the larger problem with Tatum in that I think we all acknowledge he's an incredible basketball player.
Yes.
But, like, the fact that I'm sitting there going, if you poke him, can he do something? Like, I think we can safely say you poke LeBron, he's going to do something about it.
Yep.
You poke Steph, he's going to do something about it. Durant, same thing. I put Jokic in that category?
Yeah.
Is that where we stop?
It kind of feels like it.
So, like, that's kind of the other issue that we're, like, seeing right now in the NBA is, I mean, I guess Ant feels like he's getting there, but
at the same time. He has potential to do that, but he just can't, on a regular basis, cannot do that.
The Mavericks kind of poked the bear.
That's exactly right.
He didn't really do anything.
He didn't do anything. And so, like, he is not there yet. And I don't know, statistically, I don't know how Tatum can be much better than what he was last year, and they won the title.
I mean, the only thing is he could shoot the ball better, but at the same time, is like, well, what if he's just not like an elite shooter?
What if he's not an elite shooter, and do you really need the ball stopping at him more? I think that's why he's not playing, is because the ball...
I think you're right. I think it's stylistically...
The ball just stops there.
Yeah.
And so, there's not a lot you can do. Does he deserve to be on the team? Yes, absolutely. He's a great player.
I think that's kind of the other issue that we see with the U.S. is much like the Grizzlies, like, there's just like a log jam on the perimeter.
Yes.
There's a lot of similar players.
Absolutely.
And we're also taking a snapshot of who is playing well at this one particular point in time.
Right.
And it's also important to note, he played way more games than everybody else.
That's exactly right.
He's been played all the way through the middle of June. A lot of high leverage games. Like,
yep.
He's played more, whereas everybody else was kind of at home.
Right. I mean, just like anything, if a team is playing well or going on a run, you don't start making subs. You keep a hot team in. And so in the second half, when they started to get hot and started playing well, you shrink your rotation. Like, what are you going to do?
Well, it is kind of funny how the game will kind of tell you what the pecking order is.
Yes, 100%.
I have enjoyed, as someone who has been on the front lines for a very long time, and when it was an unpopular thing of how overrated Kerr is, this has actually been fun for me. Because everyone else is kind of like, what is he doing? It's like, yeah, no, it's a lot easier when you're with the Warriors. You're like, okay, just put those guys out there.
Absolutely.
But like,
You got it. This is some tough decisions. It's funny, when they're all celebrating, like they're legit celebrating at the end last night.
Oh, yeah.
And then Tatum's like, I'm so happy.
Well, it's...
What can you be?
This is kind of like are some of the the low-key moments of the Olympics for me. Like when the swimmer from Nashville, Gretchen Walsh.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
She gets beat by her teammate.
Yeah.
And you have to like smile and be like, you're super pumped.
Yeah.
Like there's nothing quite like watching athletes have to sit there and be like, I'm so happy for you. I really am.
Even our
And they're clearly friends. Like they are clearly very tight. But as everyone knows, that's usually who you want to beat the most.
That's right. You don't get to the Olympics by being
I'm just happy for everyone.
I'm happy for everybody.
Glad to be here.
You are cutthroat. That's how you got there.
Especially in an individual sport. That's
exactly right. Yeah, you're not playing for a team.
Exactly.
That's exactly.
I swim in a club. Okay.
Was it the Brazilian girl who won on the floor?
Yeah, Andrade.
And had the moment for the picture of our two Americans doing the thing. You know, like...
I love it.
Are you telling me you guys have won enough until you're that happy for her? Are you aware of the moment so you make the moment?
I think it's B.
It's B.
I think the cameras are rolling
and here is a
photo op. And here are some girls that I have noticed that are exceptional when the camera is rolling.
That's exactly right.
Like, they know this.
Yes, they are.
And then, I'm sure you didn't catch this, but so I flipped over to yesterday morning. I turned on the TV in here, and it was just on NBC for Olympic coverage, but it was the Today Show. Hoda was giving out great moments of sportsmanship throughout the Olympics, and it's like, oh, they so know what they're doing.
100%.
Yeah.
You
and I don't – by the way, that is not a critique.
No.
That's a hat tip.
That is a hat tip. Yeah, yeah, that's a
playing
feature.
Playing the game.
That's a feature, not a bug.
Yes.
That's exactly right. But you know, deep down.
Oh, like, they were fumed. You think Simone was pumped about screwing up?
Yeah, and winning, getting a silver.
Like a routine that she's done, I don't know how many times.
Yeah. No.
Thousands?
No.
Yeah.
So I get it. I get it from Tatum's point of view. He's got to be happy for the cameras, but I totally get it. Like, man, we win and doing this awesome stuff.
He's struggling even more, though, to fake it.
Well, yeah. Yeah, you can say, like, because Ant is like, He's getting to play a little bit, so he's jumping up and down with him and smiling, having a good time, and you can just see Tatum be like, "Oh, this is great, guys! I'm so happy for everyone. Let's do it."
Well, I mean, that's the other thing. It's like, at least like when you can do that photo op, like they competed.
Yes. Yep.
Like I think that's a completely different thing than when you're wearing the jersey.
Totally.
When you're in your warm-ups the entire game.
Like, I think of the Dream Team. If you're Christian Laettner, you are just happy.
Correct.
You are legitimately happy that you're there with
100%
with these guys. But for Tatum, I think he's not as excited.
Well, because Christian Laettner, for all intents and purposes, is a ceremonial player on the team.
Absolutely.
Like, he is there to usher in the, we're going from this era to this era.
Right.
You're going to be the symbol.
Yes.
I don't think Tatum thought he was going to be like a...
No, he's not.
I don't think he thought he was going to be the Gatorade symbol.
No.
Like, yeah, he's got a Gatorade deal, but I don't think he was planning on passing it out.
I think you're right. Oh, I love the Olympics. I'm going to be sad when it's over. I love being able to wake up and just have on live sports that mean something.
I am kind of ready to turn my attention to football.
Well.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, I do agree. It has been phenomenal to have something to watch all day.
All day.
Correct.
Even if you miss it live because they do the replays and it's sports you don't know anything about, or like you can only watch so many things at one time.
Correct.
You could see a replay and it's like it's live.
Yes.
It's awesome to have sports on all day, every day. It's kind of great. But it did feel comforting last night to have like, oh, there's football happening.
Yeah.
There's football back.
Kind of. Yeah.
There's something
there's
that
bad
was,
football.
There's something
there
that
was
resembles
bad football.
Football
happening. Yeah.
Happening.
There was bad.
They're wearing the
Drew
uniforms.
Locke. There was Drew Locke on the field. Throw it just, nobody identifies triple coverage and throws a strike right into it quite like Drew. Like, he let that bad boy rip.
They're
into
wearing
triple
the
coverage.
Same uniforms that we
Correct.
Recognize
Correct.
And know and
yes,
love.
Yes, then that is
that's,
fun.
That's what it is. Oh, man. All right. We're going to take a break. When we come back, Jason Smith, he's on the show right after this. I've been in that seat before.
Say one that you've guest hosted as well.
I've guest hosted as well. You're listening to the Jeff Calkins Show. It is 92.9 FM ESPN. Welcome back to the Jeff Calkins Show. Like that guy with the cool voice said, I am J.R. Moore filling in for Jeff. And on the phone, we have another guy with a super cool voice. He's the co-host of the Jason and John Show that airs right here on this station from 11 to 2 every single day. His name is Jason Smith. Welcome to the show, Jason.
What's happening, brother? How are you doing?
Oh, you know, I'm just living the dream here, sitting
hosting all the shows.
Every show.
I
mean,
we need to get you a robe, like on Saturday Night Live.
A robe would be good.
The Fivers Club.
I like that.
He's in the all show club. I mean, is that an exclusive club? I don't know that we've had many.
I think as a non full time employee,
exactly.
I think I'm the only one. Brad just came in here during the break, and he was like, "I'm going to go look in the plaque closet and see if we have something." But I think a robe would be cooler.
You should absolutely get a robe. I'm sure Brad's going to try to pull out some old shirt or a trucker's hat, an old 92. Yeah, maybe a 5-hour energy hat or something. Don't take that, man. You should. Somebody that's done what you have and sacrificed the way you have, you should absolutely get a robe, JR.
A 5-hour energy hat. I like that the best. All right.
Yep.
Here's a question that, and my wife and I have talked about this. She laughs at me, and she's probably right. But because I think, assuming we're playing like a stan country, I thought, is there any Olympic sport that you think you could just fit in and not be a reliability issue for like 60 seconds? Like, I feel like I could give Team USA against like Uzbekistan 60 seconds on the floor and you wouldn't necessarily know that they had me on the floor. Like, I wouldn't be a problem. Is there any sport you think you could pull that off on?
Not as a current smoker, not as a guy that needs to stop smoking. I'm not going to sit up here and make anything up for you. I used to think, you know, my dad had been a 400 guy back in his day.
Okay.
He wanted it from me so badly, and I truly felt there was some natural talent there, but that maybe I could have tapped into. But I look at what's happening on the track at the Olympics and right now in this current state, I would slow everybody down. But back in the day, maybe if I had tapped into my sort of middle distance track legs,
yeah,
maybe I would have had a chance. But And I don't know, man. I haven't. Maybe with breakdancing, which I refuse to call breaking. I'm just not going to do it. It's breakdancing. Maybe with, I haven't seen it yet. I think it starts today.
It's the last thing. I think at this the end of the Olympics. Yeah.
And so I let me get a look at this now. After you know, because I used to, believe it or not, I lost in a three man dance crew that included my brother.
What?
I lost in a. It was a fifth grade talent show at Roselle Elementary, but we had put together, much in the, inspired by the movie Breakin',
yeah.
We had put together a routine, man. And we, unfortunately, this is how big it was back then. Unfortunately, we lost to another group of kids that was breakdancing. Like back in the day, dude, we were really into it. So I want to see sort of what they're doing in 2024 and get back to me, because maybe some of my old moves could still stand.
That's incredible. I would love for there to be a 92.9 promotion to where you have to outbreak, like how we have Writer Than Right trivia on this show. I would love if there was like outbreak dance, Jason Smith.
You know how you could put the, we were, so imagine all three of us in a line. My little brother, he's 18 months younger than me, a couple grades down, all three of us in it, but they let him sort of play up here in the fifth grade talent show. But I had my friend Marcellus Wright, and we were all three in a line, and we were doing, you know, the wavy arms. And you know, if you're looking at it straight, it's kind of impressive when you got three guys waving their arms. It all looks like it's in unison. I mean, we looked like some damn fools out there. But thinking about it, man, we had the time of our lives. But that's how big breakdancing was in the 80s when we had old Turbo and Ozone.
Oh, yeah.
and Kelly on breaking. You gotta be a little older to value the couple of breaking movies that came out. I think there was two. There was Electric Boogaloo, Break-In, and then Break-In 2, Electric Boogaloo. I can't remember if there was a third. Was there a third? Can't remember.
Ooh, I cannot remember that.
If there was, it didn't have nearly the impact on me that the first two did.
I love that so much. This is brand new information that I've learned about you, and it makes me very happy.
Oh, the 80s and early 90s of stuff, man. Oh, brother, we could go down memory lane. That was my time.
I love that. I just feel like there's got to be some sport that I can compete in. That like I feel like I could
I'm
do
sure
like
you could.
I could do like 2 minutes on a soccer field. And just because I know the positioning where to be.
Yeah, we could.
And I can feel like I could be hidden for just a couple minutes. I could pull that off. I mean,
you might even be able to tap it over to somebody. And
I can play the ball.
Something. Yeah,
absolutely.
Absolutely, man. So I do. I've seen you. I think you're in great health. You're a man of many talents. So I'm assuming there's probably a couple things we could get you out there. Not that wall climbing, though.
No.
Last night was the first time I had watched the competitive speed wall climbing, where they're getting up in less than 5 seconds. I've never seen anything like it. It almost looks like gravity doesn't apply. Yeah, it was my first time seeing it last night. I'd heard about it. I guess this is the first time they brought the speed sort of portion to it, from what I gathered last night. And that, my friend, was incredible to watch.
That's pretty insane. Some of the stuff that, like, even watching the table tennis, you think, like, table tennis is like the lazy man's actual tennis, but those are legitimate athletes the way they move doing that.
Well, the hand-eye coordination is on a level that the human can't understand. It's sort of in the same way that you watch these, you know, you watch LeBron and athletically you can't understand it. I just think the hand-eye coordination that you have to have to play that, to play what I used to call ping pong back in the day.
Yes, absolutely.
No, they are absolute athletes, dude. They're playing so far off the table when they got to catch some of that. I don't know how they do it.
How
so
quick they move laterally.
Phenomenal to watch. Yeah. Absolutely, dude. You've got to be an athlete.
How quick they move laterally. It's like I saw like several highlight package last night, and I was like, okay, this is these guys are legit dudes.
It's quick twitch athleticism in a different way. You're applying in a different way, but it's that they are absolutely fun to watch.
I mean, think I've stumbled on the answer. Okay. If we're using the stipulation that you have, which is that brief moment of time. Doesn't the answer have to be golf? And here's why.
Oh, yeah.
Because if it's just one hole.
Yeah, you're right.
I can make par.
Yeah.
But if I have to play all 18, I get exposed.
Sure.
But if it's that one hole, I think. Now, the problem would be like, okay, you're going to see my swing, and I have a good amateur swing, but I do not have.
A pro swing.
Every pro has this move that's like you can't recreate.
Yeah, that's true.
So maybe that would expose it. But I think if it's just like, obviously, I'm never going to be a professional golfer, but there is one hole in which I can probably match professional golfers.
That's true. I don't think about golf as an Olympic sport yet, and so I forgot.
Neither did they.
Understandable.
I didn't consider that one yet. Although I guess right now, I say this as a heck, could I compete? Let's say a year ago. Right now, I'm poorly recovering from my third ACL and meniscus surgery, so I'm not doing anything right now. Although there's a gymnast who medaled, who's had three ACL tears, and so there's hope for me yet. I'm coming back for the balance beam next year. I think is what's going on.
I'm thinking, perhaps you'll inspire me to make a run at flag football in 2028 out in LA.
There we go.
Maybe you could hide me somewhere out there. I catch a couple 5-yard passes for you, but don't look for me to take the top off of any defenses. Not again, unless I get off the black and miles. Don't look for me to get anything over 10 yards.
Listen, you and I both got some training to do. I have some recovering to do. Yep. You've got some getting off the black and miles. And then by next summer, maybe two summers.
Maybe we put together some
kind of qualifiers.
Yeah, you got three years to get ready.
We can grab a couple of women because it looks like you got a mixed team and everything
that's
these
right.
days.
Maybe we can put something together.
Two world class women exactly. to do all the heavy lifting, and then you get to stand on the podium like you did something.
To me, it's been a revelation of the Olympics. I've never seen so many sort of mixed different events. And maybe I wasn't.
This is new, right?
It feels to me like there's way more this year in terms of mixed events.
It feels like we all are having that experience. I throw out the one caveat: none of us watched the Tokyo Games. And so maybe it's possible
certainly
that
not like this. Yeah,
maybe it's
not
possible like this. That what like they were introduced last time, but I think it's been one of the best things to watch.
Absolutely.
It's fascinating.
100% agree. I don't remember nearly this many mixed events in my
1,000%.
Lifetime. And so
100%.
I don't know. I didn't know if it's because I'm just for some reason more consumed with this Olympics than I have been.
We'll get Sheila Sadeghi. She can help us out.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, we've got to look around the office a little bit more, but maybe Sheila will be ready for us in 2028. We'll put some sort of mixed relay team together.
Yeah. Well, I was going to say, it's a shame we don't have Catherine around anymore, but she's also Canadian.
Oh, right. We can convert her.
Keep it American.
Yeah. Isn't that how you do it? You convert them?
I think you just say like, okay, you're American.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, I don't even think it's like a conversion. I think it's just like, you're getting like... Check their 40 time first,
listen,
obviously. Come on.
You got to get the important prerequisites out. We got to find that out. It does seem like people just go jump around and play for whatever. I mean, it's big business. You do that,
and then you tell the team that you didn't pick, the country you didn't pick, to suck it like Joel Embiid does.
That is going to be fascinating in a gold medal game because he's going to get booed to the oblivion.
Yeah, no question about it. Like, it's banned in the NBA, and I think he's loved bringing back that crotch, you know, that whatever that move is. Y'all know it better than me.
That would be Degeneration X. It's a very tasteful suck it. Yes.
That move is banned. He doesn't get to do it as a 76er, but he's been putting it on Prince. And he said, I don't know why they're booing me, but I'm going to give it back to him. I think it's hilarious.
He's got two words for him.
Give it to me, Jeffrey.
Suck it.
I mean, okay, so watching Team USA, are you worried at all, Jason?
No, and I will say I certainly was more worried yesterday after France got through than I was about getting past Serbia a third time. And so I'm not going to sit up here and tell you I wasn't shocked as I'm watching that game and what they led it for all but what 5 minutes it felt like. I think that's about it. And by double digits for most of it. And so, you know, my partner had tried to educate me that Serbia was going to have a good shooting game. Based on the fact that the first two, both in the exhibition and pool play, they'd shot the ball so poorly, but that those shooters were there. And my gosh, did they shoot the cover off the ball. You add that to what you've gotten from Jokic, and they were pounding us. And so I was in a state of shock. All that said, I'm not going to sit up here and spend the whole wake up call thing because we've had that, or a sense of urgency or the right sense of fear. Like they had to apply to South Sudan the second time they played them. But, you know, I will say this, France with a home crowd that's obviously charged it up, not just in basketball, but we've seen it all across the board, especially for Marchand and swimming. We know it's an advantage. Ask the Germans how much of an advantage it was playing what everybody's calling their home court. It's been huge for them. I think they're third in medals. France as a country, I mean, clearly it's helped them. And that's something that, you know, early on in that game, it'll feel like you're playing probably in a finals in terms of perhaps atmosphere, how loud it'll be. But other than that, man, I just think, you know, Wimby is the focus. And if they can't get a Gobert that is effective, and Gobert, for the most part, from what I've gathered, now he's been our international basketball correspondent, but he's watched more of it than me in terms of France. But it sounds like, for the most part, they play Gobert off the floor a lot of times. A lot of times they're pulling him off. And so if it's just Wimby out there, you don't have an effective Gobert. I just think the U.S. has too much. And so all that said, hey, I was overconfident yesterday, you know, going to that Serbia game. And again, I'm taking into account France is going to have an extreme advantage with the home court crowd. I mean, clearly Wimby is playing for something more than just himself. You saw how emotional he was after the win yesterday, nearly to tears. Some said he was tearing up. You're going to get their best effort. All that said, you know, a long answer to a short question. I don't think we have nearly as close a game as we did yesterday with Serbia.
It does feel like that this is, it kind of has a NCAA tournament feel with a single elimination thing that, you know, most of these guys don't. They're NBA players, so they don't get that feeling of where, you know, if they don't show up, it's a series, and so they can come back the next time and get them. But this is not that, and they're going to be there. It's like, you know, when the crowd starts feeling the underdog starting to, you know, in a tournament game, the whole crowd starts getting on the underdog side. It does have, like, I mean, it was loud for the U.S. in the game yesterday, but with France being the home crowd, I do wonder how that's going to affect them, because all it takes, the NCAA tournament, all it takes is one guy to get just lights out on
Jack
fire.
Golke.
Jack Golke, to where a dude cannot miss. And yep. You get a guy shooting 10 threes and Steph Curry doesn't have some amazing three-point performance and suddenly, you know, it's one and done. And so you do. I don't know if France has that guy where it's just one of those dudes who's like, he doesn't do anything, he can't play defense, can't do anything but shoot threes. I don't know if they have that guy, but it does. That kind of thing worries me, and the whole international basketball thing. It's just a different feel. So I don't know. I wish they were more dominant, but also it's a lot more fun when it's close like this.
No, it's a lot more fun. And listen, watching Steph yesterday was a lot more fun. I don't think Steph had sort of found his place yet. First Olympics, he's talked about it. You know, you've got LeBron as the guy they've relied on most. KD comes back. He's a key piece. And I don't think Steph, and some of it's on him. He hadn't shot the ball particularly well, especially for his level, to be the greatest shooter of all time from three, to his level. He hadn't shot it to his level. You saw him last night sort of, you know, as Serbia is talking stuff, you saw, and Steph seems like a guy that, again, you've seen him thrive on the roads in situations where he is the villain. Now, we typically don't think of him as that, but on the road, when Steph, again, you see him unlocked in a game where it's getting intense and there is trash talking, like to see that, and again, a guy like him against a crowd, you know, like you'll have against France, Steph is going to be one of those guys that's not intimidated. A lot of times can turn a crowd, can sort of take that energy and turn it.
Yep.
And so maybe perhaps for USA here at just the right time, you're finding a Steph that's finding his groove, and a Steph is a guy who can absolutely kill and turn a crowd, such as what you're going to face against France. What's that, on Saturday? Is it on Sunday?
Saturday, I believe.
Saturday. I'm looking forward to it, but I think perhaps maybe they've sort of unlocked something with Steph here. And if you've got Steph, LeBron, and KD all working together, it's going to be tough for France.
I think you're probably right. All right, Jason, I'm going to get you out of there on that one. Thank you so much for coming in and helping me out. That's
yes,
Jason
sir.
Smith.
Take care.
He's on 11 to 2 every single day right here on 99 FM,
you know,
ESPN.
You know what I realized we were like yesterday?
What?
When the Swifties discovered playoff football stressful. You know what I mean? Like, remember, like, they all, like, had that, like, this is their first time watching football.
Yes.
They didn't know, like, what the NFL playoffs
level.
Is like.
Yeah.
Every play is like, oh, my God.
Yeah.
Like, every play feels like death. Like, that's kind of what it was like yesterday. It's like, wait, we can lose?
That does feel, yeah. I think that's a great analogy.
That was one of the better experiences, watching them discover, like, what we've had to go through up for, like, 30 years. Like, oh, come on. We have scars.
We have scars.
We've not talked to family members because of this. Like, how dare you? You think, like, all of a sudden you just walk in here and you're just ready for this?
I love it. All comes back to Taylor Swift. It all comes back.
And that's exactly how she wants it.
That's exactly right. All right, up next on the show, we don't have Chris Harrington because he is working on his Scottish accent right now. He better come back with something thick. He better be a thick Scottish accent boy when he comes back. But in his place, we're going to educate you guys. We've got Max Paquette. He's a professor and PhD at U of M. He's a biomechanics guy. He knows track and field like nobody's business. He's going to talk to us and make us smarter about why people run fast. You're listening to The Jeff Calkins Show. I'm J.R. Moore, filling in on 92.9 FM ESPN. Welcome back to the show. J.R. Moore in for Jeff Calkins. On the phone, he is a PhD, a professor at the University of Memphis. He's a fellow of the American College of Sports Medicine. He's the meet director of the Murphy Classic. He is the first on-the-ground correspondent at the Paris Olympics on The Jeff Calkins Show. And most importantly, he's a dude that works with my wife. Welcome to the show, Max Paquette.
How are you today? I appreciate it, man. Yeah, doing well.
Awesome. So right off the bat, I just got to know, because I know you are not only a Mr. Biomechanics, you're a runner yourself. While in Paris, which sport have you watched and thought, you know what, I bet if I entered right now, I could medal?
Oh, man. That honestly, none.
None? What, not even team handball?
Oh, dude, these guys are insane. I saw speed climbing. I thought I would make it 2 meters and fall off, you know?
Oh, no.
Yeah. No, it's been amazing, though. I mean, these athletes are unbelievable, so it's tough to compare. But I would love to see an average Joe in every event, for every Olympic Games, just to show how crazy these athletes are.
I really think they should do. I mean, people talk about that, but it almost seems like, what would you call it? That you call that like a control in a test, was like to have like whatever the normal guy is. I really think they should just like in the 100 meters, it's eight dudes in the final. They should just have like a ninth spot to just have like a 35-year-old, like regular guy who's a fit guy, but like not an athlete, just to see what that would be like.
Well, exactly. And here at the Stade de France, there's actually 9 lanes, but they only run 8 athletes. It's perfect.
See,
you know?
Right
amount of lanes.
It's wasting space, by not having a guy there. We're wasting space on the track. You know, that actually kind of leads me into this, is that, and I just happened last night, and I was, my wife and I were watching, I saw this video on Instagram, and I shared it with her, and I was like, can you explain this? She was like, that's the perfect question to ask Max. I saw this video on Instagram where it was comparing the world record holder from 1924 in the 100 meters to Noah Lyles' time, and they did, and they showed, like, all the different technology and with the tracks they ran on and the shoes they ran in, and you're thinking, and they did a good job of holding the final times till the very end of the video. And at the end of this, you think it's going to be like what it looks like from 1950s basketball to today's basketball. And the world record holder was what, like 10.6 seconds, and Noah Lyles ran basically at 9.8. Why in 100 years and all the advancements we have in innovation, why are we not faster than we were 100 years ago?
Yeah, man. Yeah, I mean, a great question. I point out, though, that, you know, so Noah Lyles has run in the 9.7s. So that's almost a full second, right? So full second in the 100. If you think of it this way, a full second in the 100, think of it about a second per 10 meters. So, like, you're 10 meters back, or for, you know, the audience, 30-something feet behind the winner. So that's a huge margin. And that time back then, and the men would not win the women's races now, right?
Oh,
so
okay.
It's like, yeah, so the women now run 10.6, you know, and 10.7. So that's kind of a good comparison. It's like the women now could beat the men then. So that, to me, that sort of like drives it home, like how much faster that is now than it used to be. But you hit it all right, like all the tech. But the tracks, honestly, the tracks have made a huge difference. I actually was sitting last night, like, not to flex too much, but I was sitting with Asafa Powell last night at Linford Christie's, a Jamaican British sprinter.
That's a solid flex.
He was, yeah. So he was in the 80s and 90s, and he was talking about all this stuff. And someone asked him, like, what could you run today? And he just laughed and said, no comment. But basically, the older guys think, like, yeah, give me those shoes, give me those spikes, give me the technology, you know, all the stuff. And, like, you know, I would have a couple more accolades to my name. It's kind of the general consensus, but they're pretty humble about it.
I mean, that seems like, I feel like that's every older athlete when they look at what's happening in the current game. I mean, even down to, you know, golfers or baseball players, like, give me that technology and I'm wearing these dudes out. You know, I get, but kind of what that also makes you think, like, well, what if the guy in 1924, if he's running a 10-6 with what he had, what could he just put it, not even change his training, just put him on a different track and in better shoes, and what's that guy running?
Yeah, I'm not sure it's 1 second, honestly. The shoes definitely make some difference. All the athletes comment on this. I think the shoes definitely make a bigger difference in terms of the training. You can train more with less fatigue, basically.
Sure.
So you're able to train a bit more, which is obviously quite valuable. It's kind of an age old question. People have always talked about this and figured it out, but I'm not sure. I would guess maybe low tens, 10-1-5, 10-2, maybe.
Yeah.
When you think of it, like when everybody gets better, right? Like nowadays, you're running against people all the time. Right? In the sprints, like if you're running in a group, if everybody around you is running 9.7, 9.8. It's easier to run that just because, you know, psychologically you get pushed and all this stuff, right? So back then, like, if people improved at a similar pace, like, everybody would go and, you know, get better and better every year. So that's part of it as well.
Yeah, Max, that was going to be kind of my question. You know, forever and ever, breaking 4 minutes in the mile was impossible. Like, is there any, like, science behind when you just see somebody do it, like, that you know that it's more possible? Like, is there a psychological element that goes into all this?
Yeah, I think people say it opens the floodgates, right?
Yeah.
Something happens, like, okay, like it's doable now. What else can we do? That's just human nature. The 4 minute mile is impressive. The world record now is 3:43.
Yeah.
The American record is also 3:43. So it's very, they're very close. Point, you know, a couple of decimals off. If you think about that now, like 4 minutes now, it's sort of, you run 4 minutes, you don't even make the NCAA championships in track and field now with the sub-4 mile. Like, that's nuts.
And it took us, centuries to break it. You know, like, when he wouldn't even get done.
1954, yeah. Yeah, 1954 was broken first. And then since then, you know, it's gotten better and better. But, like, this past year, outdoors for the NCAA champs, again, like, all the guys that qualified had to run well under 4 minutes to make it, which, to me, that's still a mind-boggling kind of stat. But, yeah, the shoes make a big difference there, for sure. The tracks do, too. But also, when Bannister first broke the 4 minute mile, like, these guys trained like very oddly. Like, we didn't know as much about training back then, so people just used to go out there and hammer out laps and hammer out miles. Like, that's all they did every day, essentially, right? And then things changed, and people got better at training and understanding the science of training, and so that's helped massive amount as well.
We're talking to Max Paquette from the University of Memphis. All right, here's a question, and it feels like, and maybe I just don't watch enough track meets to have a great, a big sample size to know whether this is a thing. But does the pace setter ever win the race? It always seems like there's somebody with a late kick that always wins it. And if the pace setter never wins, why would you want to be the guy in the front at the beginning of the race? Why would everybody not fight to be like in third or fourth?
Oh man, great question. So if we talk about pace setters, where their jobs is actually to pace set. Like, so in the Olympics, there's none of that. That doesn't exist.
Right.
But in non-Olympic matches or games, non-championship events, meet directors and promoters will hire someone. They'll pay them, they'll fly them out, put them up, you know, and say, okay, I want you to run X amount of laps at this pace. Once you hit that point, drop out. To answer your question, that has happened before where a person said, hey, you're like a very good athlete. So if you're going to stay in, you know, when you get there, if you feel good, stay in, that's fine. And then they have won. That's happened. At the Olympics, your question about like front running, basically, kind of goes back to the Steve Prefontaine days in the 70s. He was notorious for front running. And part of it is, you're right, like if you front lead, you're basically wasting energy, right? Think of it like aerodynamics.
Right.
You're basically blocking the wind for everybody. But at the same time, some athletes are so confident, right? They're so confident, and it's kind of it's a huge flex there, right? Like, you're like, all right, you guys want to beat me? Like, come out. I'm going at it. If you want to come, stay right behind me, right? And so some athletes will do that for that reason. Others will go to the back and chill for a while, and then when they feel like it's time to go, they'll make a move and go around and kind of kick, as you said. So it just depends on the athletes, who they are, like how good they are, like in the world ranking, so on and so forth. Like, it can be a huge flex. So, like, I'm going to the front. Come with me if you want.
Can you make
a career?
Can you make a career as being like the essentially the track version of the New York Generals? Like you're just the you're the pace setter and you're the guy like, hey, I'm out here just to beat this. Like, but like that has, like that kind of sounds sick.
No, it does. Actually, there's a number of athletes now. In fact, if you watch the NBC track coverage, there's a gentleman named, oh my gosh, I'm liking now, but Lewis Johnson. And Lewis Johnson used to be an intermediate runner, but he did, for a number of years, he was known for pacing. Like, he would get flown out all over the world to pace, and he get paid well. And so I talked to him when he was in Memphis a couple of years ago to cover Army, and he said, yeah, I would make a good living. I would just go to all these European, large Diamond League meets and get paid really well to just do that. And that happens.
That's crazy. And so he would not win these races. He would just set the pace and then like, oh, I'm tired.
Yeah, for like the 1500, right? They say go run two laps at this pace and then drop out. And he would fly all over the world. And they pay him like, pay his flight bill. That probably give him like $4,000 or $5,000 every time, something like that.
It's like
and
WWE.
So, yeah, you're professional jobbers. Yeah,
it's wrestling. Yeah. This is awesome.
Yeah.
That is a peek behind it. I did not know that. That's fantastic. Well, that's good to know, though. But the idea that can't be a thing in the Olympics, and that still seems like even though it's like people's egos being like, I'm jumping out in front and I'm going to get this. It just never seems like it works. Like, it would seem like somebody be like, listen, I know you think you can do this, but this is a terrible strategy.
Yeah. No, generally speaking, it's not. But there are women and men that are just like, I'm just the best in the world. Like, there's nothing, no one can beat me in this race, so I'm just going to do it. But like you said, it's very rare, very, very rare. In the Olympics, they can't have the pace anyway because if there was a pacer, they take a spot, right?
Oh, right.
And so they can't like waste a spot essentially.
Sure. I guess it's in the 400 with Quincy Hall. Like when he is making this run down the stretch, it looks as though he is abandoning all technique. He's running like somebody's trying to kill him. And the other guys on the track look like they are and smooth, like they're keeping their form. How does he pull this off with just, like, it looks like he just, it's like a guy doing a windmill in a boxing match, just like fighting for his life.
Yeah.
And how does that become successful?
Yeah, well, so, you get to the point where, like, this guy was an underdog. Like, he was not supposed to win, right? So you get in the mix, and you're like, oh, shit. I'm like, oh, sorry, I'm not supposed to say that.
You're good. We'll catch it. We're recording.
You get real close, right? And then you see all these guys are fading. Like, they're dying, and I'm not feeling great, but, like, I might as well just go for it. So this guy just dug deep. And next thing you know, he's, like you said, he's swimming his way to the front kind of thing. And he gets up there, and all that, he wins the gold medal. And so, huge upset. People have been talking about technique, but sprinters are—it's ingrained in their heads. Like, you've got to hold technique, you've got to hold form. But then, like, this guy goes and does that. It's like, all right, well, let's go. It's just about sometimes it's about gritting it out and grinding it all the way to the end.
I was asked this question, so I'm going to yield to an expert. If they ran the 1500 again today, would Cole Hawker still win?
Oh, that's so good. Ah, man, I love this question. I'm going to ask it somebody later on at one of the events. So it's tough, right? Because Cole Hawker, brilliant racer, just a smart guy, took advantage of the British guy, Josh Kerr, the defending world champion, and then Jakob Ingebrigtsen, who's arguably one of the best in the world. He just took advantage of those two kind of like fighting each other. And he just saw a spot on the inside of lane one, and he passed them all in one, right? But so the way it works, there's three rounds, round one, semifinals, and the finals. So you have to, your coach and this athlete, they have to plan everything out. Like, all right, you got to get through the rounds. It might not feel great, knowing that we're getting you ready for the finals. And so all of these athletes are like trying to peak exactly on that day at that time of day, right? So to come back and do it again, a fourth round, which they never, ever, ever do, would be such a tough thing to do for all the athletes. But all racers develop differently, right? So this race developed the way that, it gave him a shot. Now, would Josh Kerr and Ingebrigtsen say, we're gonna fight each other on this fourth round? I doubt it, right? I think the tactics would be very different, and I think Cole would struggle to beat those two if they raced to win, not raced each other. If that makes sense.
No, I mean I think that's kind of the beauty of it. It's like it doesn't matter.
Mm-hmm.
It really doesn't matter if they, he just had to beat them that day. Like, that's all that matters.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
It is crazy. I feel like there's been a lot of in the track. There's been a lot of upsets that, like, people, like the guy in the steeplechase, I guess it was last night for us, that watching it last night, that you know, he got silver, but apparently he like beat his own PR by like 9 seconds. And that, how do you make, how does that happen?
Man, so Kenneth Rooks, he actually didn't make it based on, you know, his Olympic trials qualifiers. He made it on world rankings. Basically, the way it works is throughout the year, you get points. And if you get enough points around the world, you can get a bid for the Olympic Games as long as you're, you know, in the top of the U.S. And so he was, you know, he did well. He was in top three of the U.S. at the trials, but he didn't have the time standard, the minimum time that's required to qualify for the Games. So he had to wait to see where his world ranking would put him. So there's a guy who's not supposed to, really not necessarily even supposed to be in the final, right? So let alone the actual Olympics. And he's like, what am I going to lose, man? Like, I made it, you know. I'm going to put myself in contention. The guy that's supposed to win, well, the guy that won, El Bakkali, he's very tactical. He goes to the back. He waits. So Rooks just waited and said, when he goes by, I'll just follow him. And I'll let these other guys go crazy in the front. Like you said earlier, right? Just
right.
Save your energy in the back. And so he just took advantage of it, man. He's just like, I'm here. It's my first Olympics. I'm not really supposed to be here. Let's go. So everybody was surprised. It's hard to tell, you know, how he made it happen. But obviously very, very fit. His coach is a very famous coach at BYU at iStone. So anyway, really, really proud of that kid for doing what he did.
Man, that is wild. That's wild. All right, I'll get you out of here on this. Well, two questions. Number one, what has been your favorite event you have watched in person so far?
Track or overall?
Overall, like any of the Olympic events. What has been the favorite? Your favorite event you've seen?
So obviously, track's my favorite. I mean, being at a track and field venue like the Stade de France is like, it's unbelievable. Like I got some photos. Like you look at it, like this place is unbelievable. I think about like go to Rhodes College or U of M track or CDHS track, whatever. You walk into the facility, you're thinking, wow, this is an actual arena. You know?
Oh, right.
So that's been great. You know, I'm a huge fan of a woman, American woman called Alaysha Johnson, and she's a 100-meter hurdler, and she's been to Memphis. She's won the Ed Murphy Classic a number of times now. She's come to do hurdling clinics with our kids here as part of our Murphy Track Club, where we brought her in to do that, and she just qualified for the final today. I was down there this morning at the stat, and she won her section, her semifinal section, and looked absolutely amazing. So she has a nice tie to Memphis, and so I've been following her a bit. It was beautiful to see her do what she did this morning in the hurdles. She's coached by John Morant's trainer, Mo Wells. So she has a really cool tie to Memphis. I've been following her quite closely. So track's been amazing. So the other things I've seen is the beach volleyball. That's just nice. Beach volleyball in itself is amazing, right? But the atmosphere in that stadium with the Eiffel Tower in the back.
Like, oh yeah,
it's incredible. It's just unbelievable. It's loud all the time. There's never a pause in the noise. It's amazing. And then tonight, a bunch of friends and I are going to the women's basketball game against Australia at the Percy Arena for the semifinal. So that'll be really exciting. And so that's only all I've seen. I got here Wednesday, so I try to make the most of everything, but I've mostly been at the stadium every day, the track stadium. So I've only gotten to see beach volleyball so far.
Well, it sounds like you are having a blast. I'm pretty jealous because that sounds like a fantastic time. And thank you, huge thank you for joining us and calling in. I know our time zones are kind of wild. When I was texting you, I was like, I thought about texting you last night, and I was going to make, nope, that's going to be 3 a.m. for him, so I cannot do that. So thank you so much for joining us on the Jeff Calkins Show. That is Max Paquette. He is from the University of Memphis, and most importantly, dude who works with my wife. All right, enjoy the games, Max.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
We will be right back. You're listening to the Jeff Calkins Show. I am J.R. Moore filling in on 92.9 FM ESPN. This song really does make you feel good.
Isn't it kind of like those songs where like the lyrics are dark, but it's like makes you feel good, and you're like, what am I supposed to feel here?
Right. And when they throw in, ain't got nobody gonna die today, you're like, oh, wait a minute. I got a little heavier.
Well, it's like when you find out like what Slide's about.
Oh, absolutely.
Like, oh,
listen.
Okay.
I've been doing that trick my whole career.
Yeah.
It's a sad song. Just sing it happy.
Yeah.
Confuse everybody.
Yeah.
All right.
Wait, Brick's not about falling in love?
That's exactly right. Welcome back to the Jeff Calkins Show. I'm Jeremy Moore filling in. We're on our Our last little bit here, Jeffrey. Jeffrey, right across the glass. All right, I've got a question for you, Jeffrey. There's a couple things that happened that aren't the Olympics.
Okay.
We'll get to football in a minute. But shocking, I know. But I legitimately want to know your opinion on this. So, came out yesterday that Phil Mickelson is mulling his role on the High Flyers team, which sounds like a Big Three team and not a golf team, which
I still
don't even know what a golf team is. But on his Flyers team,
neither do they.
On LIV Golf amid bad play. And he's, you know, he said if he can't compete at a high enough level, he'll step aside and let somebody else in. But his quote, he said he'll play in every major on the regular tour next year. And he, those are his words, on the regular tour. And it got me wondering, like, what's happening? A few questions. How many of these guys regret doing it? Maybe the younger guys. I'm sure the older guys who are getting a paycheck will be like, listen,
the first part is what type of, because even some people that reportedly got these big figures,
they didn't
really read the fine print.
Oh.
So it's a matter of, like, guys like Phil got signing.
Or like Ian Poulter.
Right, they were given money up front.
Yes.
And so they probably don't care.
I'm sure. And it's not like they were, all they did was kind of go into obscurity. They didn't, like, ruin the rest of their career because they were in the back end of their career anyway.
Correct.
So, and then they got a huge paycheck.
The biggest takeaway was probably Henrik Stenson lost the Ryder Cup captaincy.
Yeah.
And he was going to get to be it was a European Ryder Cup, so he was going to get to win.
I kind of wonder, like, even, I don't say quality of life, because their quality of life is probably just fine. They barely have to work, and they get, and a lot of the guys are making a bunch of money. But you don't get to that level without being incredibly competitive. You can't be that good without having just that, a bit of that chip on your shoulder. And so I wonder, like, do they feel like they've, like, I don't know, a little empty is too heavy of a word for this, but like they're really missing out. Like FOMO. Do you think they're getting FOMO not being a part of?
I think Brooks does.
Yeah.
Because Brooks clearly misses, like, he misses competing with, like, the guys that he lives with down at Jupiter. Like,
right.
Rory, all of them.
Sure.
I don't think DJ cares.
Yeah.
Because I don't ever really, I think DJ won golf tournaments because he's, like, a generational talent.
Right.
I never got the sense that
he was
driven,
built for it.
Like, he's not driven by winning. I think he was driven by making money.
Yeah.
And so I don't think he particularly cares. The only person it's actually worked for, weirdly enough, has been Bryson.
Yes. But not I don't think it's because of the tour. It's that it forced him to think outside the box and find another avenue to sell and make himself marketable.
I think that's a part of it, but I think the other big part that has helped Bryson is a small doses guy.
Yes. Oh, that's true. Yeah.
The more you're exposed to Bryson, the more that you're like, oh my God, shut up.
Yes.
Like, you're not even like, you're like, that's the other thing. It's like, it's always fun to have someone that knows something about physics or science whenever he talks, and they point out, like, nothing he said was true. it's all like he's kind of a BS artist.
Yes.
So what has been great for him is he has gotten out of the spotlight, the day to day, the we're exposed to him, and so now he's done a great job with the YouTube channel.
Right.
And now when he's really the only one that shows up at major championships.
Yeah.
From that tour.
Yep.
I mean he didn't play great at the British Open, but three of the four he was right there, and he wins one of them.
Yep.
But, like, guys like Patrick Reed, like, that's the guy that I'm more curious about. Like,
yes.
Because that's a guy that did kind of view himself in a similar fashion to Brooks. Now, he's always had an inflated sense of self, but he was the guy that showed up at the big tournament.
Yeah, he was wildly unlikable.
Right.
But also was really good.
Correct. And he also, that's the other thing. It's like, his personality is wildly unlikable. His game was actually kind of sick because it's like, in this day and age where you have to just blow it 8 miles.
Right.
He's a guy that doesn't do that, and he was still kind of figuring it out, so his game was interesting. But, like, he is completely gone MIA.
Dude, I haven't heard that guy's name.
Milk carton status.
Aside from us talking about him.
Yeah.
I don't hear his name at all.
I mean, like, the guys that I actually feel bad for are some of these super young guys that didn't have any status.
Right.
And they took playing opportunities over there, and then they got banished from the PGA Tour and whatnot. Like, those are the guys I feel bad for, because it wasn't like, oh, they made this active choice to go and take the money. Like, the people that were trying to have it both ways. Like, that was what the money was for.
Right.
You got overpaid.
Yes.
And that's, like, the Taylor Gooch's of the world. Shut up. I don't care. Like,
so what's happening with, like, this merger? Or, like, I feel like there was all this momentum, like, there's a panic from the PGA. Was the story was like, oh my, they keep taking our players.
Yeah.
And there's another story coming out of another guy leaving for this huge paycheck. And like, this is legitimately going to be a competing tour. And then the PGA announces, you know what, we can't compete. We're going to merge. And it's going to be, and we don't know the details of how the merge is going to work, but we're going to do it. And then it feels like all of that has just gone away. And what is happening with LIV Golf? What happens if the Saudi guy, if the people with the money just go, you know what, we're done, and just pull out?
So I don't think that's going to happen, because primarily I think you have to think about professional golf in these terms. We think about it as viewers, and we think about it as a competition.
Right.
To the organizers,
yep.
Professional golf tournaments are largely like places to conduct business.
Okay.
So think about our tournament, like on the smallest level.
Right.
But like a huge part of it is the corporate sponsorship so that people can host clients and
sure.
presumably make deals.
Yeah.
The Saudis are not really in golf because they love golf and they wanted to buy golf, but they are trying to buy their way into the business world.
Gotcha.
And so the problem with the quote unquote merger was, as time went on and there was more reporting, we realized that was just kind of like a PR move. Really what happened, and they don't want to accept this, but all they essentially agreed to do was stop suing each other. The PGA Got Tour it. Did not want discovery.
Yeah.
The Saudis, obviously,
right.
do not want discovery.
Right.
And so it got promoted and plugged as like, oh, this is a merger. Really all they did was, the PGA Tour couldn't afford to go down the lawsuit, because
yes.
if you're up against the Saudi public investment fund,
right.
they can, like, whenever, like, that's what happens with super rich people when they get into the lawsuits with people that can't spend what they can spend. They just drag it out.
Sure.
So the PGA Tour couldn't afford to do that. Now, the bigger problem is the PGA Tour's in this crisis moment of, well, what are we going, like, we know we have to restructure the tour,
right.
but what is it going to look like? Okay, it's fine if you come to that conclusion. The bigger problem that the tour has is, who gets to decide that?
Right.
So you have a player-owned and run organization. You have a lead executive.
Yep.
You now have taken private equity money.
Yep.
You have now agreed that you are attempting to merge with a public investment fund.
Right.
So who's calling the shots?
Yeah.
So now you've got, you know, you're at this crisis point, and it's why it feels like it's so slow moving. Well, I mean, that's the definition of herding cats. Like, how do you even get all those people in the same room?
Yeah.
And so, and they're certainly not going to agree.
No, not a chance.
Like, the lead executive's only going to agree to what keeps him in power.
That's exactly right.
He's taken 8 trips to Steamboat on his private jet that's paid for by the tour. All he's really interested is that. So who does he cut a private equity deal? Oh, would you look at that? The private equity company that he cut a deal with was his college roommate's private equity company. What an unbelievable coincidence.
How about that?
What a remarkable coincidence. The players mostly hate him.
Right.
But they also realize he did bring in a $2 billion private equity investment. And so are we just going to kick him out? Are we, you know what I mean? Like,
yep.
are we going to wait until this deal gets done? Are we, or is, so now you've got some players that support him, Rory, other players that hate him, Xander
yep.
and Cantlay. And so they both have an equal share, an equal vote. And then the run-of-the-mill tour player is not all that upset with Monahan because he has increased the
sure.
purse.
Yeah, right.
And so they're not all that upset. So you just have this giant, like, you have a crisis, but it's not getting solved because no one's really in charge.
If it's a, because it's a player-owned league, so they don't have, there's not a thing like where they, I mean, I guess they're not, they don't have a union, I suppose, and so there's no CBA.
No, ironically, yeah.
There's no CBA to, correct, like, negotiate.
They're independent contractors.
Right. So when does this, so are there contract terms? Like, or I mean not contract terms, but a time limit on these contracts to where, like, okay, we can revisit how to do this, or is this always a fluid, ongoing thing? Because once they got under pressure, they suddenly found more money, you know, kind of thing. So
kind of, so
if you're, if so you're, they, like, well, where'd that money come from? So we should start renegotiating of, like, in a CBA, you would do that in your next CBA agreement. But how does golf, right, navigate,
so,
that?
So I would argue they didn't really find more money. They just emptied the coffers.
Right. Well, yes. I mean, but you,
but so, like, the point being,
you technically,
like,
stop saving the money or stop holding it over here for a rainy day. You just started,
right,
to give
just,
it to the players.
You just, like, they basically tapped into their rainy day fund, and then they also basically started kind of borrowing against their future.
Got it.
Because they knew, hey, we're going to get a new TV deal. Like, they basically started, like, spending money that they don't have, but they're going to have. So that was kind of a big part of it, too.
So when the Live Golf, I'm assuming they're also on a year.
They are contracted.
They are contracted.
Most of the players are contracted. There are a few examples of guys on that tour that are getting starts, but they're not under contract.
Gotcha. So when all these contracts run out, do you think there's going to be a thing of, like, the PGA's never not going to let them back when those contracts run out? Or are they going to go play on the Scottish Tour or the European Tour? Like,
so,
or go back to the Live Tour?
If you try to map it out,
yeah,
because that's the other thing. It's also a negotiation. So no one's, the
sure,
information that you get is only information one side wants you to get or the other side.
Of course.
So you're having to kind of piece it together.
Yep.
What seems to me is happening is when you ask, is there a time limit? Technically, yes. Like, there is a time limit, but it's been extended every time. So, like, I think it was supposed to be done at December 31st,
yep,
of 2023.
Yep.
Another extension. Like, so on paper, yes, but not really, because they just keep filing a new extension and doing it that way. So what seems likely to me is whether or not they will admit it, everyone does know deep down they're going to have to come back together.
Yeah.
Because what we've seen clearly is neither tour is flourishing.
Right.
And the only thing that matters now is majors.
Of course.
And, like, that's the only thing we care about. It's the only thing we really, everyone wants to watch, is because they're all playing together. So inevitably they know that. I think, and this is just more, this is less golfy, this is more the way the world works.
Mm-hmm.
What's going to happen is whatever the private equity company wants to happen.
Yeah. Yeah. It's money.
And
whoever has what the money wants,
so,
to do.
So if you're the Saudis and this thing's not making any revenue, contrary to popular belief, like, we can take disputes with how they've obtained the wealth.
Right.
But these are business people.
Sure.
They and
they just
are
like burning money on.
Correct.
On,
they are not just in this business of, all right, here's a $2 billion. Let's light it on fire for some golfers.
Right.
Like, that's,
no.
Like, if they're going to light it on fire, they're going to light it on fire for themselves.
That's right.
Like, you know what I mean? Like, that's how they operate. So I think what they know is we have the leverage of, you have to come get our players.
Yes.
And so we're going to, it would shock me to read that there have been contract extensions of Live golfers. And so what it seems like they're doing is they're waiting out the clock. And so as soon as these contracts run out.
Yep.
That's when everyone kind of figures out, get back to the same table. And my suspicion is the PGA Tour is going to try to poke its chest out and act like, well, they got to come back with a punishment.
Sure.
But if you're the private equity company, do you really want them to be punished either?
Absolutely not.
I want them on the golf course as soon as possible.
If I say, if you're the, yes, private equity company, you are like, I don't care.
Correct. I want them on the golf course as soon as possible. Figure out a way. So there's going to have to be some type of show punishment. Like the PGA Tour is going to have to act like they got some kind of win.
Yes.
But you and I both know it's just going to be a PR win.
Absolutely.
And when does that happen? If you made me guess, Liv has had a schedule leak again, so I suspect they're going to play again next year.
And does anybody know how long their contracts are?
No.
Because it's not public knowledge,
no,
right?
No, we've gotten a hold of some of them,
okay,
but not a lot of them. My guess is the earliest would be 26, and I'd bet against that.
Yeah.
It feels like 27, 28. Because golf, unlike any other sport, for like the reasons I laid out, it moves so slow.
Yeah, yes.
So, like everything, because there's so many stakeholders.
Yeah, and on the course and off the course.
Correct.
It moves so
100%.
Slow. Okay, so last night we did have people wear recognizable football uniforms.
Yes. We even had the Lions wear their throwbacks.
They did. They
Those
did.
Are sick.
Those are sick.
Yes.
And it was gross. Football.
Yes, it was disgusting. And the weather in both places. It was just gross football.
So, as a Giants fan, do you love and hope Daniel Jones is healthy more than ever now after watching Drew Lock do what he did?
I've always been Daniel Jones agnostic.
Okay.
In the sense that I never thought he sucked.
Okay. All right.
When a lot of people act like he sucked.
Sure.
You watch him, he doesn't suck. I also never, even when they were like, we won a playoff game,
yeah,
I never bought, I was kind of in the camp of this is not good.
Is it
kind of
like the Chad Pennington where he doesn't suck, but he's also not awesome?
Chad's better. The problem with Daniel Jones is if Daniel didn't turn the ball over,
yeah,
he'd be good.
Sure.
The problem is he's not good because he does turn the ball over.
Like that happens a lot.
Correct.
With a lot
it's
of people.
Like, it's what I've always laughed at sports where, like, when we see someone, like, have an unbelievable performance. Like,
right.
Well, if you could just be that all
just
the time.
Just be that like, all the time.
We act like there's no such thing as playing well.
Right.
Like, it's like, no, he's, yeah, like, they're peaking.
You can't do that all
and
the time.
And so, the problem that I am with Daniel is I just kind of want a new quarterback.
Yeah.
Like, I'm just at that point of, like, it's not even, like, personal. Like, he doesn't offend me as a football
sure.
player. I'm just kind of done.
Yeah. The new quarterback you want is not on your roster right
Correct.
Now. So,
well, and that's the thing. But it's like, it's like, in fairness to Daniel, I don't want to go and get a free agent.
No.
Like, I want Carson Beck, whoever emerges this year, it's
right.
like, that's who I want.
Is there a chance that Joe Milton is an actual NFL quarterback?
So, Joe Milton's the classic example of exactly what we're talking
yes.
about. If you see a highlight tape of Joe Milton,
it's incredible.
You are convinced that you've seen the greatest football player of all time.
100%.
The problem is if you've watched a whole Joe Milton game,
yeah.
you know. Like, last night was a great Joe Milton experience.
It was amazing.
You got the one play where you're like, holy.
Yeah.
Like, this guy might be it. But then, like, you have him missing screen passes, like throwing screen passes at feet.
It's incredible.
It's the full experience.
It is incredible.
The full Monty.
The amount of talent that guy has.
Touched by God.
Touched by God.
Like, you can't create someone that big, that athletic,
Mm-mm.
with that kind of arm talent.
Nope.
Because it's not like, oh, he's just an athlete playing quarterback. No, he does have the ability to throw it. It's just not consistent.
It's just not consistent.
Correct.
It's just not consistent.
It's not even, like, mechanically. It's just... But it's a thrill.
It looks great.
I mean, I still contend the post pattern of that Orange Bowl where the camera thought, like, you thought he was throwing it through the goalpost. And then all of a sudden you realize that a receiver ran under
yeah.
and caught it perfectly right before the end. Like, you're like, oh my God, that was maybe the greatest throw of all time.
It's beautiful.
Yes.
Why, like, when it leaves his hand, it looks
spins.
Perfect.
It spins so perfectly.
Oh, and then he throws it 6 yards
Correct.
Over the receiver's head.
Correct. He misses a wide open out route by 10 yards. It's a 5-yard pass that he misses by 10. You're like, how did you even do that?
Oh, that's incredible. What's coming up next on the show or on the
Here's
on the station
what's
today?
Coming up next.
Here's what's coming up next on Jason and John. It, of course, is Friday. So let's see who normally would be on Friday with them. That would be Anthony Sane. He's going to join their program.
Like Anthony.
Joining us today on Jeffrey Wright and Company will be Blake Topmeyer. We'll talk SEC football with him. It is Friday, so that means that Cobb will join Gabe at 5 o'clock.
I love it. Well, thank you for having me. I'm so glad I've completed the ESPN cycle. Every show!
I think I got a copy of Nile 72 for you.
I can't wait.
A Blu-ray of Arrow.
I'll be ready for my robe fitting, Brad.
Yeah.
We'll get the tailor here and get my proper measurements. You've been listening to the Jeff Calkins Show here on 92.9 FM ESPN. My name is J.R. Moore filling in. Thank you so much for hanging out with us. Jason and John are up next.
Cracked computer? Leaky fridge? Introducing the future of tech care. where your home tech isn't just covered, it's taken care of. See the future of tech care at Asurion.com/techcare.